Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, and this is the 292nd episode of Travel Itch Radio. Every Thursday at 8 Eastern, we bring you exciting and often exotic guests from the world of travel, both foreign and domestic. We visit with hoteliers, airline executives, authors, photographers, publicists, and others in the travel world. And tonight we reach all the way to Lebanon for travel writer Alexandra Talti. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio.
Thanks, Dan, and thank you so much for having me. It's fun to be on the show.
And thank you for getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, your time. That's a first for Travel Itch Radio. We really appreciate that. And just tell us, tell our listeners, why are you in Lebanon?
Well, I studied Middle Eastern Studies in college, and after I graduated, I was living in New York City and working in PR, and I realized, you know, I'd always had this dream of living in the Middle East, and I kind of thought if I didn't do it when I was young, I would probably never do it. So I looked on a map, and I saw that Lebanon was next to the sea, and it seemed like a great place to kind of wet my feet in the Middle East, and so I saved up a bunch of money and then moved there when I was 24, or here, I guess.
And you've been there for what, 5 years now?
Yes, on and off though, because life can get hectic here, and also it is difficult, you know, being so far away from my family and friends.
Well, also beyond that, how safe is Lebanon, especially for an American woman?
You know, when I first moved here, there was definitely more security. It was a tenser time. The Syrian civil war had just started, started a year previously, and there was a lot more. Lebanon was a lot more influenced by it. Now it's much more secure. But it's funny because in some ways I do find Lebanon to be a very safe place, especially as a woman in some respects. Like, people never will take things. Like, you can leave your purse on a table in a restaurant and walk out, and no one would ever take something from you. But you do have to be more vigilant, I think, as a woman. But I do think that that's true, you know, in many ways, about many cities and everywhere in the world.
Well, I've heard that Lebanon is a very secular country, and you don't need to wear the hijab. Am I correct?
Yes. So one thing that I really like about Lebanon is the diversity here and the diversity of people. And so they have officially 17 religious sects. So people, you know, there's Armenian, Orthodox Armenians and Druze and Shia and Sunni and many different types of faith. And so in that sense, it's very open and free. And, you know, yeah, you would never have to wear the hijab.
Would you recommend Lebanon, Alexandra, as a travel destination?
I would. I mean, it's definitely different. And, you know, I've had a few friends visit recently, and there are certain customs that, you know, you get really used to doing when you're here, and you don't realize that how different it is. Like, because the sidewalks aren't always that good, so you kind of always walk in and out on the street a bit. And I think that that can be difficult sometimes, but in general, not that specifically, but in general, I'd really recommend it as a travel destination. There isn't as much infrastructure for tourism, I think, as other places on the Mediterranean, but it is really beautiful. I mean, there's gorgeous mountains, there's rocky beaches, there's sandy beaches. It's and then culturally, there's just so much going on here as well.
Are you in Beirut?
Yes, I'm in Beirut now. I was living in a small seaside town in the north before, which was a really great experience. I loved that a lot.
How big is the American expat community there?
There's a fair amount of Americans because there's the American University in Beirut here. So that attracts a lot of students and graduate students and professors. I will say there's way more British people. I think because England has historically had a lot of ties to Lebanon. Obviously, there's a lot of French as well, because Lebanon, for a short period of time, was had a French mandate after the fall of the Ottoman Empire. So there's much more Europeans. It's also much closer. But there's a fair amount of Americans here, which is, I think it can be helpful when you're living in a foreign country to kind of find people that are similar to you. So that's nice.
And we're talking with travel writer Alexandra Talti. What about the language barrier? We talked about that briefly before we went on the air. Could you tell us, have you had any problems with the language?
Well, so most Lebanese people speak English, French, and Arabic. And when I say most, it's really, like, if you graduated high school, you speak all three of those languages. And so there really hasn't been that many issues for me. In some ways, it's actually made it difficult because I'm studying Arabic. And it's really hard, especially in Beirut, to, like, practice with people because everyone – it's easier for everyone involved if they just speak English. But in other ways, obviously, that makes it a lot easier. I've lived in other countries, like when I lived in the Dominican Republic and I was in a small seaside town, I kind of had to learn Spanish because if I didn't, I couldn't get things done. So, yeah, it definitely that makes it much more convenient and easy.
And, Alexandra, you have deep roots in the Middle East. I understand you had an encounter with a motorcycle gang there. What happened? What was that all about?
So that was a few years ago. I was visiting Lebanon. I'd moved back to New York, but I was visiting for a couple weeks first. And I had a story idea. And then when I was here, I heard about this story that apparently the Hell's Angels came to Lebanon, and they were thinking about opening up a chapter here, and basically there's a lot of motorcyclists here, which is funny because actually because of the Syrian civil war and the political conflict with Israel, Lebanon is right now landlocked. Like, you can't drive a car in or outside of Lebanon. You can only take a ferry or come by the air. But there's a huge motorcycle community here, which is funny because it's such a small country and they don't really have that many places to go. But so I came across this story and I was super intrigued because usually in most countries, you know, motorcycle gangs, they run drugs or they have, they engage in illegal activity. But here, this really tough one percenter motorcycle gang, the Rebels, when I would talk to them, a lot of them got into it. The older ones got into it after the Civil War. It was this way for Christians and Muslims to come together. And now it's just, you know, this really awesome community of men and women, less women, but still some, who, you know, for them, this is their kind of freedom. And they're not involved at all in any illegal things. And when I would ask them about it, they were like, we already have, like, there's already militias in the country. Like, we can't do anything. Like, we just want to ride our motorcycles. So when the Hell's Angels came, they kind of were told, like, hey, this is probably too tough of a country for you to get into. Like, you don't want to deal with this.
Well, by comparison, it must have been much more peaceful riding the mailboat in the Bahamas, even though you're probably in the Bermuda Triangle. Please share with our listeners.
That was really fun. That was one of my first stories. I think I did it around 4 or 5 years ago. That was like my first kind of travel writing story. And I rode in a Bahamian mailboat, which I don't know how much you know about the Bahamas, but it's an archipelago. So it's
yes.
Hundreds and thousands. Only around 300 of the islands are inhabited, but it's like 1,000 islands that are all connected by this mailboat system. And they've become really integral as more and more Bahamians, as time has gone on, moved to the capital. So it's this way that they kind of connect what they call the family islands with the center of the country. So I rode this mailboat for 4 days down to the most remote part of the Bahamas called the Ragged Island Chain, which is actually it's just outside of the Bermuda Triangle because it's actually closer to Cuba than the rest of the Bahamas. But that was really, it was super peaceful. My last 3 days, my first night we had hit a crazy storm. That was probably pretty scary because the captain, I was interviewing him and he kept trying to not scare me, but he was like, well, one time we capsized. And I was thinking, why is he telling me this? But he was smiling and joking the whole time. So I think he was trying to make some good journalism for me.
Oh, that could have been frightening to capsize on a boat in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah,
yes?
It was definitely. I decided to take some Dramamine, you know, like the motion sickness medicine.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to go to sleep because being awake and seasick is not helping anyone right now.
Well, in the same area of the world, Alexandra, was it exciting investigating illegal prostitution in the Dominican Republic or looking at surf camps as prevention against gang youth recruitment in El Salvador?
Yes. Well, actually, in the Dominican, so prostitution is legal. So I lived there for a year, and I really wanted to do a story about, you know, how that affected people and communities. And that was really interesting because I think I was reporting on that for Playboy, and it was in the town that I was living in with most of my reporting. And it was interesting because I got to see this other side of people that, you know, I talked to ministers, I talked to doctors, and I talked to women who were prostitutes, but maybe didn't identify.
Yes, we've just lost Alexandra Talti. I'm sorry, in the middle of her sentence. Hopefully she will call us back pretty soon. You are listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and travel writer Alexandra Talti from the Dominican Republic. I want to tell our listeners that this is Blog Talk Radio. And check out this is Travel Itch Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We're also on iTunes. Check out our shows, our archive shows. You will also find them on my website, which is www.danschlossberg.net. And Alexandra has just called back, and I will bring her back on. Welcome back, Alexandra. We lost you for a second, but I'm glad you're back.
Hi, Dan. Thanks. Sorry about that. The internet is not 100% in Lebanon, so I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, we're talking about prostitution in the Dominican and surf camps as prevention against gang youth recruitment in El Salvador.
With the Dominican, I was just saying that it was really interesting because I'd lived there for a year, and when I came back to do that story for Playboy, I got to see a different side of this place that I had spent a lot of time, and I spoke to doctors, I spoke to women who worked as legal prostitutes but maybe didn't identify as such, and it was just a really interesting way to kind of look at this place that I had loved and known a lot about, but really realized I didn't maybe know as many things as I did previously. So that was really interesting.
What about El Salvador?
El Salvador is a place that I'm very interested in. I went to begin writing a book or to start the first draft of a book, and I fell in love with the people there and the culture and the surf. And it was really interesting because, you know, as I'm sure you read in the headlines, they are having a really big problem with MS-13 and Barrio 18, which are these gangs that are really ruthless and violent. And, you know, they started recruiting kids as young as 8 years old. And a lot of the communities along the beach, they feel that surf is kind of one of the few ways that you can get a kid into something that, you know, once they have a board, like, yeah, maybe they don't have a lot of funding, but it's this passion within them. And that it's become this great way to kind of keep kids off the streets. And that was really interesting. And seeing, you know, the team, they're trying to qualify now for the 2020 Olympics, which was exciting. So that was a very heartwarming story.
Okay. Tell us why Italy is such a good destination for the budget traveler.
Italy, you know, I think on one hand, of course, Italy can be very expensive if you want to do super touristic things. But one thing that I love about Italy is that it is super inexpensive to get around. You can take the train almost everywhere in the country. It's clean, it's fast. You get to look out the window, which is always nice. There's tons of really great markets. Like most towns will have a market where you can go and just buy really amazing fresh produce that in America would be expensive. But there I find that like the quality of food can be really high for a low price. And then also, you know, it's very common to have aperitivo at, so you buy a drink and then you have kind of these tables set out with food. So I think that there, the country kind of values like good food and getting around to places and seeing cultural events. So if you plan it the right way, I think that you could have a great budget vacation in Italy. Just maybe not if, you know, you're going to Venice and going on a gondola or with a gondolier.
Okay, we're talking with travel writer Alexandra Talti. Do you prefer domestic or international destinations? I think I know the answer to that one.
Yeah. I would probably say international, although there I do love, you know, America, and there's some places, especially, you know, if you travel, if you do road trips or things like that, I very much enjoy that in the U.S.
Well, how often do you get back to the States?
Well, I'm actually going back in 2 weeks, which is exciting. It seems that I get back twice a year, which is good, you know, because most of the places that I write for and most of the people I work with are based in New York or L.A. But so I think I find that it's helpful to get back twice a year, although sometimes it is a heck of a journey. It takes basically a day each way to get here. So.
Okay. Well, how do you find work overseas?
I would say, you know, actually I get asked this question a lot, and I wrote an article about it for Forbes many years ago, and I think that might be why people reach out to me now about it. But I would say it really depends what kind of sector you're working in and what country you want to go to, because there's amazing programs where you can, like, get a job teaching English in Southeast Asia, parts of the Middle East, Latin America, and that's a great way to get a job abroad. If you know that isn't, if you're not interested in teaching, or you know maybe you have a very corporate job, a lot of companies you could work within your company to kind of get a transfer to move abroad. For me personally, I mean, I saved up money, and then I moved to Lebanon, and when I arrived, I just told people that I was a journalist. And I do think, obviously it depends on, you know, the country's immigration laws and things like that. But I do think that moving, if you know, you know, your whole life you really wanted to live in Panama, or you've always wanted to live in the Czech Republic, I would say moving there and making connections that way can really open a lot of doors, especially if it's not a center of commerce, like a place like London or Paris, where it might be easier to find connections to opportunities there already.
Alexandra, how long have you been a travel writer, and what are your favorite destinations, both foreign and domestic?
I've been a travel writer for over 5 years now, and my favorite destinations, I would say, I mean, obviously, I highly recommend Lebanon. I recently went to Sri Lanka, which I was just super fascinated by. I've been to Asia before, but never Southeast Asia. And it was just a really beautiful country. And I'm a surfer, so I loved the waves there. And in the U.S., I would say right now, you know, probably because I'm homesick right now. So I'm just going to say it's Southampton, my hometown. It's a really great destination. I also love Georgia, so.
Wow, that's quite a diversity right there.
We're
talking with travel writer Alexandra Talti. Have you done or planned any books that we should know about?
I actually just finished the first draft of a book about farmers in my hometown, Southampton, which is also known as the Hamptons. And, you know, their fight to preserve. We're one of the oldest farming communities in America, and there are these 12th and 13th generation farmers that are fighting to stay on their land. And so it's their story, and then my story of being from this small town and what that has meant to me.
Okay, I've been out to Southampton many times, and I love it myself. Alexander, do you find travel is fun? Is travel fun, or is it more of a hassle for you?
You know, there's obviously times where you end up sleeping on the floor of an airport, and it doesn't seem so fun. But there's still something. I don't know. I think I probably haven't – maybe I'm not old enough yet, or I haven't spent enough – nights on the floor of an airport, but there's still something so exciting. I think just when you're in an airport and you see all the destinations and you see all the people going in and out, and yeah, I still find it exciting.
Well, what airlines do you enjoy most, and which ones would you recommend to Americans coming to Europe or the Middle East?
Definitely all the Gulf airlines. They are so nice. It's honestly, I sometimes have flown through Dubai to get to Beirut, which is like 4 hours further east than I need to go, because it's like if it's that or going on one of the American airlines where they, you know, try to feed you peanuts for the whole ride, it's definitely worth it.
Yes, I know what that's like. And is it better for Americans and especially female travelers to travel in groups when overseas?
You know, I think a lot of it depends on what you feel comfortable with personally. For me personally, I don't really like traveling in groups that much. But I can understand how it would make you feel safer. And, you know, I think for me, I think I might have a higher level of like what I consider safe or not safe than other people. And I do think that if you're going to be nervous, then traveling in a group can be a great way to feel more comfortable in your surroundings, and especially if it's a place that you're very unfamiliar with or doesn't have a language that you can read, because it's not like a Latin alphabet.
We're talking with travel journalist Alexandra Talti. Alexandra, what countries are the safest, and which ones would make U.S. travelers wary?
You know, that's I find that to be a difficult question, just because I think that a lot of that's like in the eye of a beholder, because I think as a woman, like, dangerous things can happen to you anywhere, right? In terms of safety, like not getting pickpocketed or things like that, I'd actually say the Middle East is really safe in that regard.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it really depends on how you define it or what makes you feel safe, I guess.
Okay. Would you share some of the awards you've won?
I was chosen to be the head of the Beirut chapter of Travel Massive, which was really exciting recently. Something that it's a really – I don't know if you know about the group, but they've been involved – with all over the world, and it's been really exciting opening up the Beirut chapter here. That was something that I've been excited about most recently.
That's great. Congratulations. I am aware of it. I'm a member of the New York chapter here.
Oh,
and
great.
I believe wanderlust is an infection. I call it the travel bug. How and where did you catch it?
I don't know. I always tell my parents I think that they must be to blame. Because they always took us on trips, you know, and not necessarily to super exotic places or something, but they very much loved to travel. And from even if it was going somewhere, you know, even just a ferry ride or something like that, that was definitely a part of growing up and exploring and trying new things and, you know, taking the longer way. So I guess it started early.
And where can Travel Itch Radio listeners find your work? I know you have a very attractive website.
Oh, thank you. I have a website, alexandratalti.com, and then I write regularly for Forbes. My page there is called Adventure Hacking. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Talti, which is my last name, T-A-L-T-Y, writes.
Good to know. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to add, Alexandra?
No, this has been really great. I hope that, have I inspired you to consider a trip to Lebanon?
Well, I was going to ask you, as a Jewish person, which I am, would I feel welcome in Lebanon?
Actually, I would say yes. I actually had a friend who just visited who was Jewish, and it is obviously sometimes people here mistakenly equate like all Jewish people with Israel. So that can be an issue, but in general, I would say yes, it's fine. And I have known a few or many that have lived here, but it can be more difficult because I don't know how aware you are, but Lebanon and Israel technically like still in a state of war. So they're very. If you go to Israel, you can't go to Lebanon. So that in that sense, it's more. But that is a political thing, you know, not so much about the religion.
Right. Okay. And finally, our listeners like to know more about our guests, so please share where you were born, raised, and educated, how you broke into journalism, and how you landed where you are now.
Okay. I was born in New Haven, Connecticut. I grew up in Southampton. I broke into journalism basically by moving to Beirut and telling people that I was a journalist. And an old, a writer at Forbes, who I used to put on TV, she offered to edit my articles or offered to have me write for her on her page. And it would be published under my name, but she would give me topics. And she kind of taught me how to write an article, which was awesome. And I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Well, what was your name?
Deborah Jacobs.
Oh, okay. The last one was how you landed where you are now, but I think you pretty well discussed that throughout the interview, so I think we're just about done. So I just want to thank you. Is there anything that you would like to add?
No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, good luck, and thank you for getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning for us. And special thanks to Alexandra Talti for joining Travelwitch Radio tonight.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, it is night here, but it's fairly early, just 8:30 New York time almost. And in the meantime, I want to tell my listeners, hey, guys, Father's Day may be over, but it's never too late to curl up on the beach with a great baseball book. So try one of mine, the New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from our National Pastime, or When the Braves Ruled the Diamond, 14 Flags Over Atlanta, both available from Amazon.com. If anybody wants signed copies, on Saturday, July 28th, I'll be signing from 11 to 1 on Main Street in Cooperstown near the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's July 28th. Email me for more information. The email address is ballauthor@gmail.com. And that's it for this edition of Travelwitch Radio. Join us again next week, same time, same station, when our guest will be another travel writer, Jennifer Prince. In the coming weeks, our topics will include Maine, National Harbor, Summer Nights Bed and Breakfast in the Wildwoods, the Hotel Emerson, and the brand new New York sports stores. Watch our Facebook page for announcements. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.